Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith, and today we have Alex Griff, who is a firefighter and paramedic, and we are going to talk about the To Through and After series that has we've been starting for the last few weeks. This is our third To Through and After series, and we're really featuring tactical athletes of all shapes and sizes and ages. And, you know, what we talk about is what you did to get to the training, what you had to endure, and how'd you prepare yourself to get through the training, and what's life like after the training when you're an active duty firefighter. And, you know, from there, we'll talk a little bit of like, what's life like after you're a firefighter? And we can go there. You're a little young for that part yet, but we can definitely talk about what's your plans and things like that, too. So Alex Griff, if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you into firefighting.
Again, thanks, Stu. So I'm a full-time Hazelcrest firefighter. Just started my 8th year of service. Been in the fire service since 2004 now, and kind of, you know, just getting part-time jobs, some volunteer work before I was able to finally land that all-elusive full-time job that it seems like it's so hard to get. So, you know, I was, I really didn't have a whole lot of direction kind of when I was in high school. I was a three-sport athlete. So I thought, hey, I'm going to go to the NFL. I don't have to really worry about anything else. So, and kind of fitting that we're here on 9/11, I was a sophomore in high school, second period history class. And that kind of started to change my outlook a little bit. It was either, okay, you know, what am I doing? What do I want to do? And it was kind of military, police, fire, something along those lines. And I ended up going to college for a year. I played college football. I was pretty heavily recruited out of high school, but I had some grade issues. You know, I just was more focused on the sports. And so went to junior college, played for a year, and then kind of was like, yeah, you know, this probably isn't going to be the path that I want to follow. And then the fire service kind of somewhat fell in my lap. I've got a relative, an uncle, who's on the job, and we kind of talked a little bit, lined up some stuff, and I was able to get into a fire academy end of 2003, 2004, right in that area. So that was just the start of it all. As far as the before aspect of the training, I was lucky enough to have that pretty solid base of athletic, you know, fitness. So when I got into the fire academy, that really, really helped, because we dropped a significant amount of people from the physical aspects alone.
I mean, just alone from the physical fitness test to get into it, correct?
Absolutely.
And then the actual academy itself had a pretty big attrition.
Yeah, right? You know, it's interesting because, you know, we can go right now, we can go run a couple miles, swim or whatever, but now you throw an extra 75 to 95 pounds of weight on you, as in what firefighters wear on a everyday basis. Now all of a sudden your conditioning engine is all different. You know, we even see that to this day. We get some real fit guys, but then we put them in that element of either high heat, the confined space with the breathing, and all of a sudden it's a different ballgame. Guys that you see fit in street clothes all of a sudden aren't that fit. So, you know, it still helped, you know, being in football pads and doubles and all that. So that really helped carry me through the training, you know, for before.
I found that I have a lot of thanks to my high school coaches for that kind of preparation. Because, I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, football is a great preparation sport for feeling uncomfortable, putting on a wet, nasty set of pads for the second day in a row, you know, the second time in that day. You know, there's a lot of mental toughness that gets built in these type of things. And, you know, just pure effort alone to try to make the team is, you know, it's one of these things that we like to call stress inoculators. You know, it makes you just a little bit more stress resistant whenever later on down in life, whenever you have such challenges as the Fire Academy, like you mentioned.
And I think from that experience, even what you just mentioned, it's kind of like that whole world of get your, and I, you know, we talk to the new guys in the academy about this all the time, and even new guys that we hire on as career firemen, is just start to get used to being comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Like if I can just say, you know what, I know this is going to suck for the next hour, or you're going to a building that's on fire, it's not going to be easy. Just kind of get that in your mind already and know, you know, just embrace it. And I think from a mental aspect, you know, that's a big thing. But some people really struggle with that element, you know, yes. I'm so uncomfortable that, yeah, no, this isn't going to work for me.
Right.
You know, and I have a certain respect for those people too, that can say that, you know, like, oh, yeah, I got to wash my hands with this. And yeah, so I think that's important too for those people. But
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There are times to man up and just say, you know, this isn't for me, because it's not for everybody. You know, and I admire, you know, firefighters, you know, so much, just because, you know, they're going in a direction where everybody else is running away from, and it is, you know, it's never a pretty sight where you're about to go.
Yeah.
You know, so getting to, so what other sports did you do besides football?
So I was football, I ran track. And I in fall and actually was playing soccer as well.
Okay.
Wow. So a lot of stuff that kind of pushed the endurance aspect, you know, of, you right. know, in that world.
And plus you had to build a strength and power base too, which probably in the end helped you with carrying that 75-pound, you know, gear, you know, whenever you were going through the academy.
Yeah.
So tell me about going through the academy. How was that for you? What were some neat moments when you realized, you know what, I'm learning a lot of stuff and my training is working?
You know, it was it kind of hit almost like day one, where we had a very aggressive but highly motivated individual who was the lead instructor for the academy, and just the way he talked about what journey we're going to be starting, it was kind of like it clicked. You know, I was like, sweet, you know, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm here for. So, and then throughout that, just as you sat in the classroom, did some training, you got onto the training ground, and things just started to kind of click. You know, it was always, you know, a lot of stuff was brand new, so a lot of it was a struggle. But it was kind of like once you are able to get your gear on in 30 seconds and get your air pack on and breathe on compressed air in 60 seconds, you're like, okay, you know, and that's motivating in itself, because you're seeing, you know, you're making progress. And the biggest thing that he always said was, you know, amongst that brotherhood through the academy is, you know, I still talk to guys that I went through the academy with, you know, 15, 14 years ago. It was a competition amongst each other, but it was like an honest competition, you know, there was right. no, you know, it was not malicious or whatever, but hey, if you're putting your air pack on in 40 seconds, well, I'm going to do everything in my damn power to put it on in 38 seconds. And, right. you know, so it was just that push through the entire academy that was kind of like, you know, it's clicking, it's here, this is what I want. And, you know, the whole training aspect was just, you know, we had a lot of knowledgeable people. Yep. out in front, and just giving you that information was something that was just, you know, dynamite.
That's really an important piece you said there, because one, inspirational, you know, you had to have some inspirational mentors there of people you wanted to be like. You know, I can't count how many SEAL instructors I had that I was like, wow, I got to up my game if I want to be like this guy. Right. Yep. And, you know, so that inspired you. Now you still had to do all the work. And that inspiration can easily wane on a bad day, but you know, your discipline and your motivation and you know just your mental toughness that you've accrued through the years, you know, helps you get through those days. And then the key thing that you said that I take to the grave with me is competition, right? Because if you and your buddies are competing, whether it's a competing for a run or competing for the most push-ups or how quickly you can get ready and be squared away, you know, you never think about quitting that event when you're thinking about trying to win it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's where I came up with the term, you know, train to compete, not just survive, because I've seen so many people who are just trying to survive with the minimum standards that, you know, have a real hard time finishing any event, you know, because they're just trying to get by with the least amount of effort. And, you know, in these lines of work, you know, that doesn't work, you know? So how about this? How about any cool stories about the first time you're fighting a fire, you know, at the academy? We'll get to it in real life here in a minute, but, you know, the first time spraying the hose and it's in dark and it's 1,000 degrees in this house, you know, how was all that for you?
Well, I would have to say the number one thing that sticks out in my mind is when we did our first smoke appreciation day. And now smoke appreciation today isn't like it was when I went through the academy.
Of course
not. There's some more stricter guidelines and rules, but it's unfortunate because I think a lot of candidates now kind of miss out on some of that nitty gritty in your face toughness that there's a fine line that has to be walked now. I'm sure you kind of understand what I'm saying with that.
Sure.
So we went to a burn tower. It was a 3-story brick construction, and they could set fires on all the floors or whatnot. Well, our instructors took us to the 3rd floor of the burn tower with no self-contained breathing apparatus. So they lit the fires, and as everyone knows, heat and smoke goes up. It's got nowhere else to go. So we went up there. There was 15 or 16 of us in our class, and you stayed up there as long as you could. And if you could no longer take it, the instructor would walk you down. And the cool thing was, well, I don't know how cool it was, you know, looking back at it now, but, you know, you come out with snot running down your face, you're throwing up. But the instructors were right there with us without anything on either. You know, so they were suffering with us. And, you know, they're kind of talking us through why we're doing this, things that we're going to endure in our career, what a civilian's going through that we're going to save who doesn't have the protection that we have. And just, again, the biggest thing, one of the biggest things in the fire service, especially at the academy level, is the history of the fire service.
Yes.
Who came before us? What did they do before us? What kind of equipment and tools that we have now that they didn't have? And, you know, in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, guys weren't wearing air packs. They were going into the buildings with nothing on except their gear and 3/4 boots where their legs weren't protected. And they were eating all that smoke. You know, that's why they get that term, those old smoke eaters, you know, those old school guys that, you know, no air packs in our day. And, you know, they just, you know, it just gives you that respect of, wow.
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah.
You know, so that was, even like right now, as I kind of say, you know, you kind of get chills thinking about it. That was probably the most, like, respected moment I had for the instructors, the academy, the guys around me, and just the history before me. That how did these guys, you know, in the 60s and 70s, these guys were going to fires every day.
Yeah.
You know, and they knew they were going to fires every day, and that's what they walked into. So that was one real, real special moment early on in the fire academy for me that was just kind of like, wow, you know, respect.
Yeah. When we were learning about the history of a special warfare the same way, you know, there's a term called the naked warrior where, you know, they did not have wetsuits, you know, when they were, you know, laying out, you know, taking out obstacles on the beach, you know, at Normandy, you know, they actually greased themselves with, like, you know, motor oil or Vaseline or something just to kind of get that extra layer of protection from the cold water. I mean, that was how they stayed in the water longer. All they had was a knife and a backpack full of explosives and a round mask and a snorkel and a pair of swim trunks. You know?
Yeah, you see those hardcore pictures and you're like, how did they get their jobs done with
hardcore
that? You know,
yeah, exactly.
That's what they had.
It grows.
So
you, you learn to respect your elders in this business. That's for sure. Well, let's do this now. Let's talk a little bit about, you're an active duty firefighter, and I understand how it works in the fire service. They're just like in the SEAL community, you're on probation for a year, right? And so you guys even call it probie. Is that universal, the term probie?
Yeah, for the most part. Probie? Yeah.
Now, where you worked is outside of Chicago, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, we're just outside Chicago, probably about 15 miles.
Okay, so you're looking at kind of an urban area, maybe some vertical fire type work that you have to deal with as well.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me about your process. You said you had to wait around till you found a full-time position.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, the process itself is hard to get into. So first, you need to have the academy. Right. You have to be certified as a firefighter. And now, a lot of jobs, minus your big cities, you have to be a paramedic also. So some fire academies are a year training. Some fire academies are, you know, Monday through Friday, 8 weeks. But the minimum paramedic school is between 6 months and a year. So that process is just a long process before you get hired. And then the thing about getting hired is you've got to take an entrance exam. You've got to take a physical agility test. You've got to take an entrance test. And, you know, it's a crapshoot. How do you finish on that test is big. You know, and a lot of times I was taking a few department tests where you sit through an orientation. They explain to you about the demographics of their fire department, how it works. And then they say, and we're hiring one guy potentially in 2 years. And you look around a room and there's 100 people in a room. And you're like, well, I don't know if this is going to happen. Wow. You know, am I going to finish number one? Because, you know, guys in the military get 5 points. Guys with a degree get 5 points. So right away, you're kind of like, if you don't have any of that stuff, you're kind of looking at, you know, it's going to be tough. And then there was other times where, it's the law that they every 2 years in Illinois, you have to establish an eligibility list. You have to have a list posted. So even if you're not planning on hiring, you have to have and host that testing process. But you don't know any of that until you go to the orientations. So I went to some orientations where it'd be like, yep, we don't plan on hiring, but we need to establish the list or we're on a hiring freeze. So wow. It was just that process, and it beats you up mentally because you're taking these tests. You're paying the application fees can be anywhere from $25 to $50 a pop. So without being a full-time employee anywhere, you're working part-time hours. Well, that equals part-time wages, and you're shelling out money. You got to pay for the physical agility test, which can be anywhere from $125 to $150. So it's just, you know, I think, it, you know, ballparking, I took probably 25 fire department tests before I got hired.
Wow.
And there's some guys that get lucky. They take one test one time and they get picked up. I just wasn't that lucky. And there was a few times where I was like, you know, if I was getting to a point where, when I was lucky because I got hired when I was 25. So full time. So I was still relatively young, you know, and that's a good age, you know, but I was just, you know, for 5 years, I was just, you know, starting to go through that mental thing of like, man, what am I going to do if it doesn't happen?
Right. Now, were you able to do any volunteer firefighting units during
that
time?
That's how I started. I started as a volunteer, and then there's also, quite a big population of part-time fire departments where you work 12-hour shifts. And I did that to keep my skills up, to, you know, keep in the network because that's really all I had at that point. You know, I was – and you would apply for – I mean, at one point, I was working 4 different fire departments. I was volunteering for 1 and then working part-time for 3. So you try and do your best to work full-time hours – but, you know, you're getting paid $12, $13 an hour at some of these part-time departments. That's all they can afford to pay you. So you got to try and add up as many of those as you can. And my outlook on that was the more fire departments I work at that time, the more fires I have the chance to go to.
Right.
You know, the more experience, the more opportunity to keep my skill set up. Right.
So, now this place where you're hired now, how is that one? Is that a pretty busy one for you?
Yeah, we are one of the busier departments in our area. We're close to 3,000 calls out of one firehouse with a minimum of 4 guys a day. We just upped our manning a little bit, so we have a maximum of 6 a day if nobody's off or anything like that. So, and pretty consistently, we're one of the busiest working fire companies in this area. So, which for, you know, for suburban departments, you don't hear that too often, but we just happen to be placed in a good area that we get fires, departments around us get fires, and we just happen to go to all those departments. Because again, you look at a big city, the manpower that they have, well, we need to combine 5-6 fire departments to get that kind of manpower. So we all help each other out.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. And what's the name of your the fire department you're in?
Hazelcrest Fire Department. Yep.
You said that's just outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
So have you ever had any big multi-alarm fires where you had to go up into Chicago and help out as well?
We have not. Suburban departments have in the past. I'm not sure what the year was, maybe 2005, 2006, they had the LaSalle Bank Building fire, which was a big high rise, heavy fire on upper floors. And a lot of Chicago fire department companies were there. So then they plugged suburban fire departments to come in and man the quarters for the CFD because they were just getting so taxed with their own calls plus that fire. So, but other than that, you know, the city pretty much handles everything on their own unless it's something, you know, big like that.
Right.
Or, you know, God forbid you ever had some type of, you know, 9/11 incident in the downtown area, you know, then of course we would be moving. But
gotcha. So what kind of shift work do you do at Hazelcrest?
So everything is 24 hours on, 48 hours off, and you can work a maximum of 48 hours on, but then you have to have an automatic 8 hours off before you can come back.
8 hours?
So, yeah. So okay. You can, so if, you know, if I work my shift and then I'm on a trade or I work an overtime shift, I can take some time off and then maybe come back in and work some more overtime or pick up a shift for a guy if he's got something going on before my next actual 24-hour shift that I'm assigned to.
Right. So it sounds like if you're getting 3,000 calls a day, or I'm sorry, a year. Sorry.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Sorry. 3,000 calls a year in a 24-hour shift, just doing the math, you're probably not sleeping in that 24 hours.
Often. Yeah, it's pretty rare for us to go through the night without being interrupted. It's very rare.
What kind of rare? Like less than 4 or 5?
I'd say out of 10 shifts that we average working a month, I'd say out of the 10, we may sleep through the night one time, one shift.
Okay. So about 10%.
Yeah.
10% chance.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so we're usually up moving throughout the night.
So tell me how does that affect your time to train? Are you able to train while you're on shift?
Yeah. So we start at 7 a.m. and we work till 7 a.m. the following day. We kind of have a routine that we go through. You know, we check our equipment in the morning. We do some fire service related training, whether it be tools off the rig, you know, whatever is on the schedule for that day. And then we are allotted time for fitness every single day.
Nice.
You know, and it's not mandatory. It's more of a, how would I put it? To get the guys to work out, you know, it's more of a bullying tactic where we berate each other to let's go, you know, get out on the floor and let's do some, you know, some working out for our job.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, we've got a nice setup as far as, you know, fitness wise. Now the thing that, you know, that kind of sucks is being as busy as we are, there's a pretty good chance that, hey, we start our workout, about 5 minutes into it, we're out the door.
Right.
So then we come back, we try and pick it up, and we always try and finish. You know, we usually give it one or two times. If we get interrupted a second time, it's usually a wash. You know, we're probably not going to, you know, get it in. But,
I got you.
Yeah, and we've got a nice setup. You know, we have kind of an older firehouse. So I was able to outfit the entire fire department in that fitness category. So I was able to take over that area and build out, you know, our fitness gym. which we don't have room for it indoors per se. So all of our fitness equipment is outside where the fire trucks are parked.
Okay,
so they're
nice.
So what I kind of like about that is it's nothing fancy. There's no ceiling fans. There's no air conditioning. If it's 100 degrees out, well, it's 100 degrees in that bay. If it's 32 degrees out, it's cold. So, and I enjoy that. Some guys call me crazy for it, but I think that that's good for my mental toughness. Like, God, I got to go work out, and it's only 40 degrees out there. Well, got to do it.
I mean, you got to work in that. You got to work in that temperature too, you know. And it's you got to put on your turnout gear when it's 100 degrees as well.
Yeah,
that sucks.
It does, and I love that's the mental aspect that I love about it is. And I try and give this as much to the guys as I can. I never work out at the same time. I always work out at different times. I don't want my body to get used to a 10 a.m. workout. There's times I work out in bunker gear. I'll do firefighting activities all in bunker gear as part of my workout. I'll just work out in the extreme heat and extreme cold because, like you said, you have to. And I think from a mental aspect, I think it's very beneficial. So,
because
you got to do it.
That's good. That's a good idea. I never thought about it as like, because I've always been very routine. Like I kind of need that routine of training, and my body is perfectly adapted to early in the morning. My day's kind of open. I don't have anything to compete with. First thing in the morning, boom, get it over with. You know, maybe get a second one at lunch if I, you know, cut my morning one short or something. But that's an interesting idea to just train whenever, especially if you're on a 24-hour shift. That's pretty much what you're going to have to do. So that's a good way to do that. I mean, a lot of people probably don't have that mentality, and therefore they miss the workout because they were on a call at 10 a.m. when their normal workout time is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good one. So, yeah, be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Be flexible. Absolutely. I like that. I guess that's one thing that the fire service almost requires you to be, is to have that kind of flexibility, you know, in your schedule, your day, and just be ready to go at all times.
Yeah, you have to be because, again, we could walk in. There's times I've come in for shift at 7 a.m. and at 7:05 we're – at a building that's on fire, or at 3 a.m. we're in the, you know, we've been sleeping and we're up, and, you know, all of a sudden you go from 0 to 100 in no time at all. So I think, that's just what your body starts to get used to. You know, unfortunately the sleep deprivation and stuff like that is, you know, medical studies show how bad it is for you and how detrimental it is for your long-term health. You know, that's the job you signed up for.
Well, how about this? How do you take care of that, you know, when you're not on shift? You know, what are some of the things that you do to get that natural recovery process of sleeping and your nutrition and things like that?
Yeah, I'd say as far as I'll go with the sleep part first is I try no matter what to get 8 hours when I'm not at the firehouse. So whether that means me going to bed at, 8:30 because I got to get up at 6 for a side job or whatever, I'm pretty religious about that 8 to 9 hours of sleep on my off days. I'm not a big one to take naps. Like if I am up all night at the firehouse, I don't like to come home and go to sleep because then when I wake up, I almost feel worse sometimes. I kind of feel better to go and get a workout in or go to my side job or whatever. So that's my routine on, my off days. As far as nutrition goes, the fire department is historically known for having excellent cooks in the firehouse, whether that be, a lot of butter and, whatnot, the food is great, but it's come a long way of knowing that, hey, cardiac events are the number one killer for firefighters, not dying in buildings, not rescuing people. It's heart attacks. So how do we prevent that heart attack? And it's with nutrition and fitness. So we're really good at the firehouse. Every once in a while, of course, we've got our pizza days and everything like that. You got to have that. You got to have that balance. But I go 80-20, 80% of the time I'm as clean as can be. 20% of the time I kind of do whatever I want to keep my sanity. So, yeah, and at the firehouse, you eat what the cook eats or you don't eat. So it's portion control at that point. So if it's some, if you know it's like a real heavy stick to your ribs, feel good meal, I'll just have kind of a small portion, you know, that's, and you know, that's the routine I take. But off duty, I'm pretty solid in my nutrition. You know, a lot of, I kind of subscribe to the whole paleo diet. That's what's worked best for me. So a lot of, meat, a lot of protein, a lot of nuts. I know it's limited fruit, but I'm a big fruit guy, so I do a lot of fruit. But so that's my kind of off duty type of you know, sleep and nutrition aspect of it.
Yeah, I like the saying, you know, you're 100% paleo 80% of the time.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, yeah, definitely.
Tell me this about what you're doing now. You said you had a side job. But you're also involved very heavily with the, you know, the CPAT, and which is the, what is it, Canical or Candidate Physical Abilities Test?
Yeah, that's it.
Which all firefighters have to take to get the job. Now, they don't have to take it to maintain the job.
Right.
Right? That's not something that is required. So walk us through that, I guess, a little bit. And then we can talk a little bit about your side job too.
Yeah. So that is, the CPAT is awesome. It's a great test, I think. I really enjoy just the validity of it and what the candidates have to do to actually pass it. So it's 10 events, or I'm sorry, 8 events, 10 minutes and 20 seconds, all firefighting related activities. And basically, fire department said, you know what, listen, we need to have some kind of generalized test across the board that fire departments will recognize. So it's international. It's both the USA and Canada. Mm-hmm. So it is, and the nice thing too is the fire departments, it's all the money is off their hands. They don't have to hire guys to do overtime. They don't have to set up their own course. They don't have that liability issue. It's all on the candidate. Pay your money, go take the test, prove to us that you took the test, and, you know, it's good to go. Let me just close this window, Stu.
Yeah. So is that your side job, doing the
one of them.
One of them?
That's one that, you know, at pretty consistently, and then I kind of travel around talking about the test to fire academies, recruits, high school students, you know, getting them prepared to say, hey, listen, you may have all the certifications in the world, but as a fitness standpoint, you need to pass this test. So here's some things that you can do to prepare and to pass it. So that's the area that I focus in with the CPAT.
Okay, nice. So real quick, just so in case, I'll put links to this, by the way, to the CPAT in the description of this video here. But go ahead real quick. Just what makes the CPAT so job related to the firefighter?
Well, throughout the test, the start of the test, you're wearing 75 pounds of extra weight on your person.
Right. And that's the whole actual turnout gear, correct?
Yeah, just about. Yep.
Yeah.
And then once you're done with step one, which is a stair climb at 60 steps a minute, you're done with that, you lose 25 pounds. And now you complete the rest of the event with a 50-pound weight vest on.
Oh, okay.
So that's a stimulus that people just aren't used to. You know, their body, that zone isn't trained often. So, and then every station after that is something that you will do in either a fire academy, on the fire ground, training, every aspect from swinging a sledgehammer, raising a ladder, crawling through a dark maze, punching through ceiling to expose hidden fire. So everything is job related. There's nothing in there that's fake, fluff. You will do everything throughout that test. And it's a hard test, you know. You see a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, they have trouble through certain things. Now, with some good training and good direction, you know, it's a very passable test. Right. For males, females, everybody. But So it's 100% job related. It was studied by the International Association of Firefighters, International Association of Fire Chiefs. They came together, put it together. They liked it. And now here it is pretty much taking over the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, I've always enjoyed job-related events, job-related fitness tests. And the fire department has had it right for decades, you know, with this CPAT. You know, military is getting a little bit better. They're starting to create these combat fitness tests or these tactical fitness tests where they're actually, instead of being a push-up, sit-up, mile-and-a-half run, they're actually doing, you know, events that they will do again. You know, a backpack, you know, ruck, or, you know, adding squats and deadlifts and shuttle runs and, you know, movement under fire, carrying ammo cans and, you know, all these type, you know, firemen carry, you know, carrying an injured person, you know, all of those drills. And I know that's one of your events as well, right? You have to do a body drag.
Yeah. 165 pound dummy, total of 70 feet. Yeah. You got to pull him on the ground.
And so, people need to realize too, you're going to be lucky to have a 165 pound person that you're trying to save.
Oh, yeah, that's
in this generation, this world. I mean, there are so many people over 200 pounds, men and women, and even bigger. And that's a tough one to prepare for.
And especially as, yeah, like you said, yeah, you're 200 pounds, and then put the gear on, and then put the air pack on. Now you're 250, 260, 270. And the thing that I always stress for, you know, tactical fitness with firefighters is chances are you're not just going to walk up to the building and start dragging people out. You're going to be working prior to that. So yeah. What is your condition like up until that point? Are you able to effectively make that rescue or drag your brother out after you dragged a hose, forced right. the door, you know, so it's, and it's 3 a.m, right?
Right.
So yeah, no, that is definitely something that, you know, has to be considered when we're talking about, you know, fitness for firefighters. And
yeah, we used to call them when we were going through training and doing workups and stuff, we used to call them combat conditioning courses, where we would run, we would ruck, we would swim, and we'd have to carry all of our stuff, you know, drag the bag while we were swimming. And then we'd get out, we'd do an obstacle course, we'd go to the range, we'd have to do our shooting, and then we'd have to go back in reverse and just do it all again, you know, because that's what missions are. You know, you got to get to the mission, you got to get, you know, through enemy territory, which is going to be even harder. You got to find, you know, the target, do your thing on the target and be thinking and be creative and get things done. And then you got to leave and go back home, you know? And so that's, you know, those are great fitness tests or fitness events, you know, to help you prepare for your job. And from what I have seen, and I've even was able to do the CPAT once, and you know, that I'm not a firefighter, but it felt like, all right, newfound respect for firefighters, because this is one crazy,
you know,
good test.
You brought up interesting point about the CPAT is, you know, you need that to get hired, but you don't need that to maintain your job.
No.
So, and a lot of departments, you know, they have yearly physicals with their doctor,
right?
But there's no type of physical fitness test for active duty guys, unless they do it on their own. So one thing that we've actually adopted at Hazelcrest is, we do a fitness test once a year, and we designed it to be all job related, kind of mimic the CPAT a little bit with a couple different changes in there, but and no punitive if you fail or if you can't finish it. There's nothing punitive, but it really gives some self awareness to that individual on like, holy crap,
yeah,
like I need to work on this. I haven't done anything in 6 months, and I thought I was good to go. Yeah, no. You know, and then it's four of us together, you know, or six of us together. So that one guy might now be like, well, I don't want to be the weakest link in this chain. So what do I got to do to get better? So that's kind of something cool that we've adopted and the guys embraced it. And, you know,
absolutely. I think that is probably the best attitude to have towards police and firefighter job related fitness test, but just because one, yeah, you're not going to fire somebody after all this money you put into them and training them. Right. But at the same time, you got to let people know that, you know, their fitness level currently is not going to be good enough. You know, if a situation is going to require them to, you know, do all of these events, you know, in real life, which will be also harder because now you're adding heat and smoke to the equation, you know, versus a nice clean, you know, fire bay, you know, to do the test in. So yeah, that's smart. And it kind of, I like the way you do that, where you bring it, you know, you just make people recognize, oh, I need to up my game a little bit and time to get rolling again. And maybe I'll quit skipping that workout that everybody's doing.
And it kind of goes back to, it's become a competition now where Black Shift wants to beat the Red Shift guys. Red Shift want to beat the Gold Shift guys. Individuals are jawing back and forth at the kitchen table. You know, so it's actually become something cool where guys are like, well, I'm not going to let him beat me at this. You know, I'm not going to let a new guy beat me. You know, some probie's not going to beat me at this drill. So that's what it's kind of turned into. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So what's next for Alex Griff? Fire.
Well, you know, I'm going to keep on, hopefully, you know, we keep growing the CPAT, and that's going to be a big thing to, you know, be pretty much the main facility in this area. Love to be the main facility in Illinois for candidates. Still, you know, got some ways to go with Hazelcrest. Like I said, just started my, you know, eighth year. So by the time I hit my 20th year, I'll be 45. So, you know, pending my health and everything like that, I'm going to, you know, stick that out to at least 25 full-time years. And, you know, I currently, you know, work for a fire academy, which is pretty time consuming. And I really enjoy that aspect because I think when you get those guys at the ground level, you can really impact their career. They can always look back and say, you know, man, that instructor, these group of instructors really sucked. I don't want to be like them. But then I like to look at it and be like, you know, if I can affect change for one kid or just be like, man, you know what, that's the way I want to do it for my career. And, you know, that impact you can have on somebody can change their outlook for the next 30 years that they're going to be performing in the service. So that's an important thing for me. Because I want my whole goal is to leave this job better than I found it.
Right.
You know, I want it to be better than, you know, how it's been for me and so on. And I think that's the only place you can do that. And then also when you get the new guys that get started, all the probies that get hired at your fire department, you can really affect change there. So that's kind of, you know, the plan. Just going to keep on keeping on like this, really focusing on my fitness, but also the fitness of all the other, you know, fire service. That's, you know, that's the after plan for me right now. And then when that day does come to kind of hang it up, you're always a fireman. You know,
right.
there's never going to be that till for the rest of my life. I still want to keep spreading that message, you know, and I want to be the 50-year-old fireman that the 25-year-old fireman is chasing at workouts at the firehouse.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I want to be, and then pass that information and pass that knowledge along to those kids. Cause, you know, someone gave it to me. So now it's my job to give it to the next guy.
Well, I'll tell you what, all the firefighters I've worked with and the fire departments I've worked with, that really does seem to be a universal theme. And, you know, you leave it better than it was when you found it, you know,
absolutely,
for the next guys. And I think that's something that's part of your creed, your ethos, you know, in that fire community. And that, I think that's why you guys keep growing and getting better, you know, and able to do remarkable things. And incredibly brave things as well. I mean, today, you know, like you mentioned, when we started this thing, you know, today is 9/11. We're remembering 16 years ago, you know, we lost 343 firefighters in New York City. You know, that's it's a big loss. It's a big loss to New York City. It's a big loss to just America for the type of people that we lost that day. And I think it's very fitting that we have you on here today just to, pay homage to the firefighting community.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, it was you and I spoke this morning before we started with the 9/11 workout that I did before we came on. You know, halfway through, you kind of start feeling like sorry for yourself. You're like, man, my legs are killing me. I've got 150 squats to go with 95 pounds on my back. Then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, shut your mouth, because think about why are you doing this? And yeah, think about those guys. You know, they had to climb up 80 floors before they even started going to work, and
full
then
gear.
Full gear, And so it's like, yeah, it's just a really, the day for, just to reflect and to, through however anybody does it. I listened to a bunch of music this morning on the way to the gym that was kind of sombering, guys that wrote about 9/11. And then, when you get to the gym, it was just kind of like, okay, this is why you're doing this, so just embrace it. It's going to be uncomfortable, but it's you're doing it for a greater cause, a greater reason. So this whole day is just kind of that day. Yeah.
Never forget.
That's right.
Never forget. So Alex, thank you very much for joining me on this little journey I'm taking with To, Through, and After. I'm honored to have a firefighter on here, and I appreciate your time. And I think this is going to be really good for people who are considering being in the fire service as well. So it, I think it's good to see that we're all tactical athletes, military, law enforcement, firefighters, and we all come from very similar backgrounds, and we all are very similar people that just want to serve and, do what's right and serve our country and our communities. And, it's an honor to just be able to talk to all of you and get your story, on video. So.
And I thank you, for having me, and thank you for your service and everything that you're doing for the, the tactical athlete community, the awareness, the importance. So I thank you for that as well. So
not a problem, buddy. Well, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day, and everybody, we'll have another To, Through, and After here in the next few days, and tune in for the next one. Thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you, Stu.